My guest today is Mohit Astana. So let me tell you a little bit about Mohit. So he's a 27-year-old entrepreneur who built a 37-unit real estate portfolio worth about $2 million, 2,642 miles away from his home in San Francisco, California. We're here to talk about how he did it. How did he build such a massive real estate portfolio at only 27 years old, remotely, not even being in the city, working, like I said, 2,600 miles away, and still building and running such a large real estate portfolio. So, Mohit, welcome to the podcast today. How's it going?
It's going well. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited for this podcast. I mean, I always love to jump on podcasts. I've met a lot of cool people just through Twitter, and I mean, this is no exception.
Nice, nice. Welcome, welcome. So, Mohit, let's start from the very beginning because this seems like, 27-year-old, almost 40 units of rental property. The kicker was you started this investing journey in the middle of COVID, April 2020, right? So tell us a little bit about how you got started. How did you get onto this journey from one real estate investment to now you have 37 units?
Sure. So, I mean, my fascination with real estate actually began in like 2008, 2006, something like that. My parents were renovating our house in 2006, maybe earlier. But that's when HGTV first became big, and I remember that I was watching Design on a Dime with my parents. And after that, I was like, that would be cool. And then I started watching Property Brothers, and that is when kind of real estate stuck with me. And so my career path truly began in college. I interned at a commercial real estate brokerage. They did mostly medical and office and some retail in Scottsdale, Arizona. And that was really cool. And then during COVID, before, like, my parents had bought some real estate in 1998, 2010, 2012 here in the Bay Area. And I mean, the Bay Area has appreciated massively. It's not like my parents were geniuses or anything.
Yes, 1998. I mean, that's over 20 something years, right?
It
So,
it's done very well. That's all I have to say. So I mean, I've seen how well real estate can do and build a legacy. It could help give you a vehicle to obtain wealth and then do whatever you want with it. But my journey started in April 2020. We closed on our first house. It's me and my partner. This was actually interesting because we had partnered up, at least on paper, for with a guy from Bigger Pockets that we met, who was an agent and a construction guy. We owned a construction company, and this was actually a we still have this house today. So it was a flip. It was supposed to be done in like, 3 months, 4 months. We were supposed to make a profit of, like 60 grand, and on paper it sounded really good. And then this is when I had really learned a lot about who to trust and how to build your team. So this contractor, at first it was pretty good. We had put up all of the capital, but we have the title. So legally speaking, it's all in our name. So he started to do some work. He started to do demolition. We had hired a subcontractor that I had found through Facebook. He was local. My partner at the time was local to Cleveland. So he was sort of there as a construction manager, and we found out that this subcontractor had fleeced us out of around $2,000. We had paid him for the work, and then he just kind of dipped out. Our partner at the time, he had reallocated some of his crews to start to demolish the house. And then slowly, like, we get update videos, and then after a while, it's radio silence. So it's about July of 2021, and then I or 2020, and I had to go visit. I'm like, I paid, we paid 55 grand for the house. We've put in, I think, to date right now, about 180.
And renovations.
I mean, it's a brand new house basically. Like, I've done new roof, new wiring, new like new plumbing, new bathroom, new kitchen. Everything is brand new. So it's a really good house. But this contractor that we partnered up with gives us radio silence, and then we have to hire like our third contractor. And so far he's really good. We like him. He's a referral, but it gave me a lot of I mean, people in real estate may try and screw you, especially if you're 2,000 miles from the property. So we had done that. And then in, we still have the house right now. We're trying to either rent it out for long-term or Airbnb it. We might do either depending on the numbers. But this really helped me understand who's like on my team. What are some really good questions? Make sure everyone's incentivized. And then in, so we bought the house in April of 2020, November of 2020, we wanted to move into multifamily. So we bought an 8-unit for, it was about 25 a door. And then January we bought a 14 unit. And then last month we just closed on the 22 unit. So now we're up to 37 units in total. We've bought 45. The 8-unit, it was a horrible property. I can go more into that if you want, but okay. I mean, we've made a lot of mistakes with that for sure.
Okay, we'll talk about the mistakes.
Sure.
All right. So you just simply snowballed from one to like multiple 8-unit, 12-unit, whatever it is.
Yeah.
How did these guys, so first of all, the question would probably be, why did you decide to partner? I know you said Kushal was in Cleveland at the time, right?
No. Kushal was his partner from the Bay Area. We had another partner.
The other partner, okay. Okay, so that's the one where it didn't work out. So where does Kushal come in? Because I know you talk a lot in your book about, you know, having a business partner, working with him,
doing several deals
together. So where did that come in to your deal making?
I mean, from day one, like, so I've known my business partner since we were 12. I'm currently 27. So we've known each other for 15 years. Now our families are like, our families own the 14 unit together with us. His parents are investors in some of our deals. So it's very much like a family affair type of thing. Mm-hmm. So he was there from day one. Like, he's one of my best friends. And I told him, I'm like, look, like we started talking about real estate investing in like July of 2019. And then I said, I'm not here to make a quick buck. I'm here to be in the business. Like, real estate's like a long-term game, right? For like 20 years. And we've had experience. Like, we originally started out with $100,000 just as like a liquid slush fund. And then we've had some expensive mistakes of like, because everyone wants to partner. Bigger pockets will tell you to partner, which is great. I completely agree with that. But you also have to vet your partners too. Mm-hmm. So we've wasted maybe like $6,000 to $8,000 just kind of pissing away money with legal agreements. And what we should have done was iron out every single like case of like, hey, what happens if you die? How will your heirs get access to your portion of the company? What happens if there's a disagreement? You should be asking yourselves like these tough questions, because
full due diligence, like you would be acquiring a major company, for example.
You have
a partner.
Yeah, because I mean, when Kishore and I started, we had also, he is a mortgage loan officer in the state of California, in case if any of your views are from there. But I mean, you should be asking yourself like, what happens if he dies, for example, what happens? Just like, you have to think of everything. And your lawyer, like, I pay my lawyer maybe like $300, $250 an hour, and he'll ask me that. But instead of me asking Kushal that, our lawyer is going to ask us that, and it's going to cost us money to think about it. So you have to really flesh out these ideas beforehand.
So it's really like, really thinking analytically before you jump into it, because a lot of people, when they're trying to buy real estate or invest in real estate, it seems like, you know, there's been so many seminars over the years on TV, you know, all those late night Tony Robbins, all those type of things. You see them and you hype, buy real estate with no money down, and it seems like, hey, it's just a cakewalk or a walk in the park. Now you're talking about doing like high level intelligent work before you even get started on like looking for what to invest in.
Yeah. I mean, like, my situation is a bit nuanced because like, I buy multifamily. For every single property, we have a different company. We have a holding it's very much set up like a private equity structure. And like our, we have like a fee structure that is sort of similar to it. But if you were like just going in on with like a friend or two and just buying a single family house every year, you should still have it in writing. Even if you get married, like where I live in California, it's a community property estate. So if I ever get married to someone, then they could have technically half my assets. So it's something to think about. You could also own it in trust. There's a variety of different ways that you could protect your assets, but the main point that I have to say is like really flesh out these ideas of like what happens in these edge cases of someone dying, if someone wants to get bought out, stuff like that.
Okay. So now we've talked about like, you know, figuring out what to do with a partner before you get into the deal. Now let's talk a little bit, because you alluded to it earlier, some of the big mistakes you made, because I know a lot of people will be thinking, okay, great, before he even buys, I want to know exactly what to avoid. And you've already talked a little bit with the partnership and so on. But with that first house, for example, what were some of the major lessons, or also with any of your new multi-units, what were some of the key mistakes that you guys made when you were doing all those deals?
I'm glad that you really asked this, Chi, because like with like people in bigger pockets are going to say, real estate's great, real estate's easy. No, it's not. Like passive income, that's a am I allowed to swear or no?
Yeah, you can go ahead. Cool. Yeah.
That's a big load of fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
let me tell you that, because real estate is not truly passive unless you invest in like a syndication or like in like a real estate investment trust.
Yeah.
I mean, I still spend a couple hours a week. Like I'll text with my property manager. I'll talk to my business partner at least like a couple times per week. I'll always be texting him. For me, it's an obsession, because like I bought a membership to like the local business journal of Cleveland called Crane's Cleveland. I'll look through that, seeing who runs a portfolio. But it's work. It's a business that you're building.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. This is also my investment strategy, is like to buy and hold multifamily. And that's a little bit more professional. If you were to buy like a single family every year, it might be less of one, but you have to think of it like a business first. So some of the mistakes on my 8-unit, I like to get more into that, because I would say that is a deal that I lost money on. I lost about 20 grand, give or take, maybe 30, 20 net of tax benefits. So one, I found the deal on Facebook. That's not necessarily a red flag. I got an inspector. So with every single property, I do an inspection. I'll get opinions on like what the locals say. I'll call the cops, the non-emergency hotline, to get a feel of like what's actually happened. If they can send you the past, you know, 2-3
crime stats.
Sorry?
Crime stats of the
Exactly. Well, I mean, like for a particular property, you can ask them to send you the like what reports have gone on at the property. If it's domestic violence, like, or like property theft, or like hard, like if it's vandalism or something like that, it's not like a huge deal, but like drugs, like murder, stuff like that, I would avoid that. So with this 8-unit, a couple of the big mistakes that, excuse me, that we had were, the landlord that had previously owned it, we had been wine and dine, you know, we'd met him in person. He was also Indian too. So that kind of established, it established trust a little bit. But he had not really screened his tenants, and he was like, oh, like we just assumed that, hey, when we move in, we'll just renovate the units one by one. They're not probably that bad. We'll probably put Section 8 in them. And the units were renting between 450 and 500, and Section 8 would have been able to pay 625 on that. So I bought it for 200. I maybe would have put in another 20 grand, which is very low. And I would have been able, like the building may have been worth 300, 325, according to the income approach of valuation. So one of those is like the big mistake is that the tenants didn't get screened with proper background checks, which had affected my property manager once I had taken it over. Secondly, the location was absolutely dog shit. Like it was, I don't know if you read this in the book, but
the place where Kelly told you not to go.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you look in the book, I met a guy named Kelly. We had tried to turn off the water in my single family house, and Kelly comes and we tell it, we're really excited. You know, we're like 25, 26. We just bought like we're up to 9 units now. Oh, whoop-de-doo. Oh, 9 units. Nice. That's great. But then Kelly asked us where the address was, and He was like, no, 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 no. He said it five times. Mm-hmm. And then to make a point, I was like, it can't be that bad, right? I'm a sheltered Bay Area kid. I'll be the first one to admit it. And then Kelly calls up his, I think it was his brother, his cousin.
Uncle, brother, cousin.
Yeah. Four or five people all the same thing. I should have taken this as a warning sign to not buy it, to say absolutely not, hell no, goodbye. Some of my friends that were brokers were like, you know what, in like 3 to 5 years, like the reason why we bought it was because there was supposed to be like a Justice Department and there were a ton of new grants coming into the area.
Okay.
So that was sort of appreciation, but I was like, hey, like in the short term, the cash flow from the property is going to pay for a note and it'll be fine. We ended up, the property was horrible. I remember 1 month we had made, it was 6 out of 8 units that were rented. We'd made about $3,000 in gross rents. We had a pest control issue. And so pest control is usually like, we had like bed bugs and roaches and stuff like that. That's mm-hmm. usually caused by dirty tenants.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pest control had cost $1,200. Another tenant, we had a plumbing bill because they kept shoving grease down the drain. And you're not supposed to do that. That cost me another $600. My debt service on that was about $1,000. So like after expenses, I was probably out of pocket by like $600. And I'm like, if real estate's supposed to make me money and I'm not supposed to pay out of pocket, like this is stupid. Mm-hmm. So we sold it. But the point of like where we were trying to sell it was we had the pest control caused by dirty tenants, right?
Mm-hmm.
The dirty tenants, we had to kick them out to solve the issue. Or excuse me, not kick them out. We had to like not renew their lease because they were month to month. That's the technical way of putting it.
Yeah.
And so they were upset that like, you know, like their apartment is no longer theirs. So they come back, they throw a brick at the window. Allegedly, they throw a brick at the window. My units are renting for $500 all day, easy. But then I call up the window company to get a replacement. And then they're like, it'll be $350 to get a new window. I'm like, okay, that's fine. But they're like, it's going to be on back order because this was like at
COVID.
This was COVID. So the whole world went to shit. And we're like, okay, well, they'll be like, it's $250 to board it up. And I was like, fine, whatever. And like at that point, I was like, I'm paying half a month's rent just to board up like a one unit.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't make sense. So we had put it on the market and we sold it like 2 months later.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy, Ben. So so that was that what informed you guys to? Because I know when I read the book, you had talked about the different grades of like investment property, A, B, C.
This was a D. This was a war zone. There were bullet holes in the building. The cops told me, do not go there. And then I'm crazy. I enjoy, like, during the daylight hours, I will go and I will just, like, drive through the various neighborhoods. So last time I was in Cleveland, I was there. And then I got out and I walked around and I was like, I shouldn't be doing this. But yeah, this was a D. I've slowly started to go up towards like my 14 units is C-. The 22 is like a C+. I'm slowly getting better, but I like
this. Oh, the first house, what was it? What grade?
That's like an A- location. That's a good
one. Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. That's a flip. Like I'm comfortable. Like it's like B+, A-. Like
okay.
I will walk around to like 10 p.m. at night. It'll be fine. Like it's very safe. It's fine. But
okay.
Cleveland, so just
So just by virtue of trying to get the multifamily, you were going like further down the grading scale in order for you to get like a really cheap one, right? Because if you started with like an A grade 8 unit, for example, that would be what, a couple million dollars?
Well, not in Cleveland, a brand new good. Cleveland, call it 60K, but it would be maybe like half a million.
Okay, good. So let's segue into that. Sure. Why this focus on the Northeast? Your partner and yourself, you're both focused on Northeast Ohio, right? So that's Cleveland,
Lorain is where
Northeast. So why is Northeast Ohio such an oasis of like cheap accommodation versus the rest of the US, because I've lived in Jersey, I've lived in Florida, and I lived in Virginia. So my first apartment outside of college, I was paying about $600 a month. And then that house was selling for like $50,000 at the time. Now, this was like in 06, 07. It was selling for $50,000. I looked at it today, and it's like $200,000+. And I'm like, damn, I wish I had like...
I wish I bought it, yeah. I mean, physically, I was telling my dad, I mean, because like one of our single family, like our houses in the Bay Area have done quite well. So I was like, Dad, we should have bought more. He was like, shoulda, coulda, woulda. So why Cleveland is your question? It's a very good question. Because I'm from the Bay Area. When I tell people, hey, I invest in Cleveland, they're like, why? So a couple things. One was I was trying to invest in Arizona, in Phoenix. I went to school at Arizona State. So I was trying to buy a house for myself.
Well, you know.
Yeah, in 2016. But like I had no money. My dad would have co-signed and he just basically told me, fuck off. Like I don't want to invest in that. Go make your own money. So Cleveland is very like affordable on a per door basis. Mm-hmm. It's got really good rent to price ratio. California is arguably one of the worst states for landlord laws. Yeah, California, New York, like they're both up there. It's like, I don't want to get political, but like generally I like red states to invest in. Okay. The really good rent to price ratio. So for the 22 unit that I just bought, that's like a C+ area. I'm buying it for 53 a door and it's renting for about 740. Okay. The 8 unit was 25 a door and it was renting for about 450, 500. So about 1.8 at 2% rent to price ratio. My Lorain property, the 14 unit that we bought for 27 a door, maybe after renovations, it's about 35, 36 a door, but minimum rent is like $600.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a strong 1.7 to 2%, give or take on the, depending on like what size unit. So the rent to price ratio is very compelling. And I was very focused based on cash flow with multifamily for the way that it's valued. Multifamily is so if you're to buy like a single family, right? That's based on the comparison approach. So if there's a 3-2 and another 3-2, same exact floor layout, but one of them is renovated, it really depends on like what the appraiser is feeling that day for like, oh, you have quartz in your kitchen, you've upgraded your bathrooms. You may have spent $50,000 on it, but like the additional value unlocked was maybe like $100,000. So like there's no like rhyme or reason why it's appreciated versus with multifamily. If I can increase my income and reduce my expenses, assuming cap rate stays consistent, then I'm able to
force the appreciation. Exactly.
So that's why Cleveland. And then another reason why is I don't like a lot of these, like I don't like Texas. I don't like Florida. Like I do like these markets, but right now there's just so much money chasing it.
Yeah.
I'm a small fish.
Okay.
I can't compete with these hedge funds that are willing to pay over asking.
Which goes to my next question. Why isn't like every other person with like an extra $50,000 rushing to go invest in Cleveland? Why isn't BlackRock and all these other guys rushing to go buy everything in Cleveland since
Question. Because they have more money and they just need to allocate funds.
BlackRock borrowed like a couple trillion for 2% or 3% during the pandemic. So they've been like scooping things up all over the place.
Yeah, I mean like BlackRock has been buying everything. Yeah. And I mean, I like on like Cleveland on a map is not like they don't lead the state for like, or they don't lead the country for like, for population growth, for job growth. But it's a very like, local. I don't want to say it's flyover country because Cleveland's it's a beautiful city. The people are really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just overlooked. And I don't like the new sexy towns, you know, like I don't want to invest in Austin. That's not my cup of tea. I would rather have very boring, sustainable, stable cash flow. Okay. Like part of my investment portfolio is in crypto. That gives me enough excitement. I need real estate to be very stable, very like predictable, if you will.
Okay. So that's why I kind of, when I read through it, I was like, oh, Cleveland's kind of like an oasis, you know. You don't see it in the desert unless you're like delirious and then you're looking for water. And then you now see like, oh, Cleveland, you can do things there by on the cheap and do well. So now does that mean that if somebody wants to replicate this, they should look for, you know, other cities within either Northeast Ohio as well? Well, I don't want to, well, I can't control anyone, right? But I don't want it to be a situation where everybody's like rushing to Cleveland. Like, so what are we looking at when you're thinking about it? You've already said, you know, low, unsexy cities with like good, decent growth, but not like super sexy where all the money is coming. So would things like college towns, for example, be like a good facsimile? How would you think of spotting the next Cleveland is what I'm saying?
Well, so I don't know. It all depends on your investment style.
Okay.
And it depends on like how, like where your sources are capital. Like, I mean, in the book itself, I talk about like, there's 1,000 ways to invest, but you need to pick something that's right for you. For someone with like a full-time job and a family, then I would just say, if you can buy in your backyard, just buy a single family house every couple of years, start out with a house hack. Like, I think you'll be doing okay. If I live in San Francisco or like in the Bay Area, right? So in my neighborhood, if you were to buy, like minimum price, at least in my current neighborhood, is like $2 million. Mm-hmm. If you were to go out in just the general town of Fremont, maybe you could get something for 900 grand. That $900,000 would maybe rent for $35,000 to like $6,000. So your yield is not, it may like break even. Maybe you go below your, maybe it's like money out of pocket that you have to pay. But depends on what the style is. For the Midwest is a gem. I have friends that do well in Youngstown, Ohio, Dayton, Ohio, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Like real estate, the beauty about it is that it's so local where you need to like you need to go out and make connections, right? Like in Cleveland, I would love to own like a city block. But like I'm not the biggest fish out there, but it doesn't mean that we all can't win. So, I mean, I kind of went around your question, but it really depends on your investment style. But a couple of the indicators that I would look at are look at job growth, look at diversity of jobs. So like whether they're in different sectors, Cleveland in particular, the reason why I like it is because it's got manufacturing. You've got a huge medical presence. You've got some tech, some banking. You've got, I think, at least three or four different colleges in the immediate vicinity. There's a really good affordable housing program. There is, there's the government is one of the largest employers in the metro area, and there's new development too. So I'm not the only one who's chasing Cleveland, but but like depending on where you buy, you can have your choice of tenant, if you will. So there's a really good tenant mix. That's why Houston is attractive to some other people too. And like, I mean, I know like Denver, Albuquerque, Reno, these are all like overlooks. Denver, maybe not so much, but like Albuquerque, New Mexico, places in Idaho, places in Montana, they're like overlooked, but they're slowly getting investor dollars. And with Kansas City, Missouri, the Research Triangle in North Carolina, I've seen a lot of people do very well there too.
So basically for someone trying to get started, just have to think about what are you best comfortable with? Because initially I wanted to lead the interview with like, you know, how can somebody replicate what you're doing remotely, right? With a 9-to-5, but it still looks like, hey, it's not going to be that easy. Like you
really not, have it's not.
A lot it of takes things work. Down. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not going to say that what I'm doing is impossible, but like, I also have to acknowledge, like, I'm very privileged. Like my parents have done decently. Capital is not really the issue. I have a high paying job. So someone who's like out in like West Virginia making like $10 an hour, it may not be the right strategy for him. If you can house, like my thought is that if I lived in a market where I could house hack, that is if I lived in one unit, I buy a duplex, triplex, fourplex, whatever. And if I can rent out the rooms, and if I can rent out the other units and I can at least break even, then I'm building equity.
Okay. Now, you talked a lot about, different financial strategies in the book. Like the three ones I noted here were the 1031 exchanges, the opportunity zones, and the 250K home exclusion. Are all these kind of like available to anyone looking to build wealth in real estate? So, say, for example, somebody wants to try his first investment property. Let's say a team of guys group together and they want to do it. Like, could these three things be available to every single person that wants to actually get involved in
The
real estate?
homestead exemption, yes, but that has to be for your primary residence. The
Oh, okay.
1031, so with the homestead, you need to live in the,
Yes.
yeah, for at least 2 out of the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And then if you're single, then it's 250 grand of capital gains tax free. If you're married, I think it's 500. And the 1031, I mean, knock on wood, it's not going to go away, but I mean, Congress has kind of been talking about it. But the 1031 is available for anyone. But keep in mind with a 1031, you need to like do your due diligence. There is like an identification, like you have 45 days to identify a new piece of property and 180 days to close.
So I think we didn't explain what is a 1031.
So it's you're able to defer your capital gains
Okay.
if you buy a new piece of property. So you can go from like resident, but you can't 1031 your primary residence
Instance.
directly. Yeah. So what you can do and get a qualified intermediary, get a CPA, just do your
Get a
own.
lawyer.
Exactly. Figure out someone who knows what they're talking about. Real estate's not my full-time job. That's my disclaimer. I think I've spent too much time with him. But basically, you can turn your primary residence into a rental for like a year or two, and then you can 1031 that if there's like a lot of equity built in.
Okay. So there's a lot of strategy involved, right? So we've talked about, trying to get the money out of it. One of the key things I saw in the book was basically there's a bit of numbers and financial, math and calculation that you kind of need to be aware of, or at least have a good grasp of before you're comfortably moving from like deal to deal to deal. Now, how, of course, you studied finance in college, so it was maybe a little bit easier for you, but how can other people like kind of, get to start learning some of this? Because I always hear like one of the best things is, oh, I don't know math, I'm not good at math, I just want to buy it and rent it out and get the money from it. But like, there's a lot of numbers involved, and you have to know these numbers if you want to do well.
Well, luckily it's not multivariate calculus. It's division, multiplication, addition, and subtraction. So, I mean, understand the mechanic. Like, real estate is not rocket science. There's a podcast that I listen to called My First Million. They often say that, like, the you don't need to be like a like you don't need to be like a like a like a genius, you know, like to have some sort of like you don't need to be like tech founder at 25 level genius. I'm an idiot. And I mean, you can do everything with like on the back of a napkin, basically. So, I mean, it's just practice at the end of the day. Like, underwrite, get comfortable with underwriting. Right now, if someone gives me like say that there's a 10 unit property and they're like, what do you think of this? Within a couple minutes, I'm able to be like, well, I think it's overpriced, maybe it's underpriced, get actuals, but like you should be comfortable with doing it. And it all comes with time, obviously. Like I've underwritten a lot of deals and it's not hard. It just takes practice, like anything. There's a lot of good resources online. One of the good resources that I started to look into is Adventures in Real Estate in on YouTube. And there's
Okay.
like a lot of different spreadsheets that you can buy, a lot of different spreadsheets that you can create. Like it really depends on how comfortable you are, but the number one thing is just underwrite any deal you can see, whether it's on LoopNet, on Facebook.
When you say on the right, let's explain that for people because I know not a lot of
Underwrite
people
just means
understand.
running the numbers.
Okay.
One thing that people overlook is you want to base it off historicals, not pro forma. Pro forma is basically your dream of like, hey, if everything is like if you were running it up to like market rents and there's like no vacancy, or like there's 5% vacancy, and here's like the new, like, here's your ideal state for financing or for numbers. Here's what the property could be worth at most, versus like actuals, which are like, hey, based on your T3, your T6, your T12, here's what the numbers are.
What are those T3?
Oh, yeah. Trailing 3, trailing 12. Okay. So it's the last like 3 months, 12 months, 6 months, whatever. Mm-hmm. One thing that's important to understand is that whenever you are underwriting any new property, you always have to underwrite using like updated property tax numbers, updated insurance numbers, because those are not reflected in the actuals.
Yeah.
I just threw a lot. So if you want me to dive into any of those, I'd be
happy. Yeah, well, I would actually say, you know what, if anybody wants to dive into this deeper, you probably we're going to link to your book. So you probably need to get the book because it's broken down, you know, not like a textbook where there's still a lot of meat in it, but it's broken down where most things are defined. You know, he gives great examples, gives you little numbers to work on. I would say if you're going to work and try to figure out, okay, in the next 6 months, I want to buy an investment property. Get Mohit's book, you know, go through it, and then maybe get like, you know, one of the real estate textbooks for a college just to perfect your math. So that do you think that's a good advice or not?
Yeah, I mean, like the reason why I wrote this book was because I kept getting hit up. Like I mean, I'm very vocal on like forums, social media with like, hey, I love real estate, I love to chat. And then that usually invites a lot of conversations, and I'm happy to have conversations, but the people that will hit me up and be like, oh, can I pick your brain? I want to understand. That annoys me. I don't like people when they're like, oh, let me pick your brain. Like, fuck you. Like, why? Like, not to say like, fuck you, but like, my time is valuable. What are you hoping to get out of that conversation? So, I mean, like kind of the conversations I've had, I basically broke down all the topics in that book, and it's basically every time someone's like, hey, can I pick your brain? I send them the book. I'm like, look, get through this, then let's chat.
Yeah. Because that way it's easier to like figure out, oh, okay, if this is a simple question and it's already addressed in the book.
It's a reason. Yeah. And it's not like cost prohibitive too. Cause like if someone wants to take me out for dinner, it's like, you know, a dinner is maybe like $40 per person. Like if you include like a drink, tip, everything, the book is $30. It's well worth it. And it'll give you it's actionable. It's not bullshit.
Yeah.
It's very
No. It's very straight to the, like, it's 140 pages, all straight to the point, everything kind of like defined and easy with examples. Because when I started reading, I was like, I have a background in finance. I understand what it is here, but if I were to give this to my sister has no idea about it. She's a lawyer. She hates finance and business. And if I give this to her, would she be able to understand it? And I said, can you quickly look at this morning? And she's like, okay, yeah, well, I understand it. It makes sense, but I don't want to do the math because it just makes my head.
Yeah, hurt. I mean, like, honestly,
you can see that you can work through the math yourself. And she's like, yeah. I said, okay, good.
The math isn't very hard. Like, the math, if you get a couple swing, like reps, your reps in, then you'll slowly start to understand it.
But Mohit, as we start to wind up, you mentioned 9 steps to buying real estate in the book. So we're not going to list it out for lack of time, but like, what are like 2 or 3 key things, you know, somebody that is listening to this or watching this, what do you think they should take away before, let's say they want to do their deal or their first investment property in the next 6 months? And since you've been advocating Cleveland or Northeast Ohio, let's say somebody wants to go into that neighborhood, you know, what are some key things they need to start working on?
Sure. So you need your team in place. Especially if you're remote, you're only as good as your team on the ground. Luckily, I've been able to have an amazing team. I love them to death. Every time we go, we'll always take them out. Like, we'll buy them dinner, we'll buy them like drinks or whatever, because it shows like I can be some guy who's just on, like, I'm one of probably like 10 California investors. Northeast Ohio has received a lot of California and New York attention, but when you actually go put a face to a name, then it's different. Like when you shake someone's hand, that means that this connection is real. Like right now, when you DM'd me, it was like, hey, it's just some random dude in the DMs versus like mm-hmm. when there's a face to a name mm-hmm. and when there's a handshake to a name, then that elevates the relationship. So I would say figure out your market first and foremost, figure out what drivers you're looking for and what your investment strategy will be, whether it's buy and hold. Do you want to fix and flip? Do you want to wholesale? Do you like, are you looking just kind of to keep acquiring properties and one by one, and maybe like in 10 years, you'll have 10 properties, right? That are all just making money and you're paying down the debt. Do you want to syndicate apartment buildings? You got to figure out that market or your investment strategy and figure out the market to that strategy. Second of all is once you identify your market, then you want to start building out your team. So, and you want to understand local economics, local drivers, stuff like that. You want to be an expert in your market and don't get shiny object syndrome. Like at some point last year, I wanted to buy a self-storage facility because I saw everyone on Twitter buying one. And I'm like, yeah, look, like that's not what I know. That's just a distraction. I would love to do that, but mm-hmm. it's not what I know. So don't get distracted. Build out your team, figure out your market, start talking to people, talk to other investors off like Bigger Pockets, Facebook, Twitter, even people locally if they've invested. Understand mm-hmm. what their strategy is and like how they've gotten to where they are. And at the end of the day, you just got to do it. Like, I don't think that, and also have way more cash than you think. Because real estate is the most capital intensive business that you can think of. Like people say like, hey, I can do deals with no money down. Yes, in theory, but they probably still have like at least 6 months worth of reserves in the bank. Right now, given that the interest rates are rising, it's also like, no one really knows where interest rates will go. So mm-hmm. you have to be very careful with what you buy. I'm not saying don't buy anything. I just bought something last month, but I mean, just make sure that your deal can afford like a 6% interest rate, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But cool. Well, my friend, thanks a lot for teaching us a little bit about how to do what you did. Well, even if it's not like to get at your level right away, but at least to get on the path to starting out, right?
Well, I mean, the most important part is starting. Because, like, I mean, for me, like, at some point, I work in tech sales. Like, my ceiling for income is high, but, like, at some point, I know I will get, I don't want to say bored, but, like, the stress was going to get to me. And it's like I want something to like retire to, if you will. So I mean, real estate's a beautiful way of getting wealthy. It's like time proven, and most wealthy people buy real estate. Yep. If you want to get rich, I would say get a start a business or find like a job in sales or something like that. But if you want the very predictable, slow way of wealth, then real estate is definitely a great avenue.
Yeah, because I remember one of the quotes you had in your book was, if you ask 140 people how do they make money in real estate, you'd say they'd give you 140 different responses, because you can literally make money from many different avenues in real estate, not just like the traditional way that most people expect.
It is, I mean, like some people, they'll start out with wholesaling, then they'll move to single family rentals. And then they'll move eventually to like apartment complexes. I know some people that have started, like one of my buddies, he works in private equity, but like he bought a couple single families in Cleveland. And then now he's trying to do some like office, some medical office. So it all depends, like understand what your strengths are and then find the investment strategy that's complementary to that.
Well, thanks a lot for coming, Mohit. I appreciate you taking the day to come record this interview with me.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Oh, before I let you go, where can people get in touch with you to get the book?
Twitter is probably the easiest way is twitter.com/mo money mo hit. That's my personal Twitter link. Feel free to send me DMs. I do answer DMs all day, as long as they're not stupid. And to get my book, it's momoneymohit.gumroad.com. I'm working on the URL getmomoneymanifesto.com. But for right now, if you click on the link in my bio on Twitter, then you can find it. And it's
okay.
If I say so myself, it's a really good resource that, I mean, anything, it'll help you set a blueprint for where you want to go for your first property.
So say that again. What's your handle on Twitter?
Mo Money Mohit. MoMoneyMohit. Mo Money Mohit. It's Mo. The Mo Money is like a mindset. Yep. Mo Money.
Yeah.
Just like that. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So yeah, and I'll be sure to take a link from Gumroad and put it in the description when this goes live. So okay. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Hold on a second.